Good afternoon.
Well, Claire, you have been interviewed. Mike Dalton interviewed you.
I can't remember what all she has said.
But she told me she had talked with you about...
We took a tape on Old Fourth Avenue. We made a tape on Old Fourth Avenue.
No, you didn't with Mike.
No?
You did that with me for the radio series.
Oh, that's right.
But this was one of the things that Mike and I talked about that she did not get with you, and I said I would like to review with you for this tape that's going to go in the library.
Mm-hmm.
About Fourth Avenue, because not very many people remember the Fourth Avenue early days. And you had told me that you went to work in a dress shop.
A drag store, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A
drag goods and dress shop,
Yeah. I see.
Mm-hmm. He was down on the... I have a picture someplace. The only picture I've seen shows Cushman, and then it has Anderson's across the side of the building. Shows where it was. The picture has... Somewhere the Andersons.
On second or third?
On fifth.
On fifth,
right at the corner of Penny's parking lot there, across where the City Hall is. You see, the Andersons are on one corner, and then right across where the City Hall is, there was a little log cabin there, and across from that was what they called the crib block that was Gordon's store. Well, it must be back in the halls. It was Gordon's store, you see.
Yes.
And then straight across, there was a little cabin that a man that was a saloon man and his wife were living in. Right across on fifth on the corner there where... It's a vacant lot, not parking lot across there.
I see. Do you have any idea when that line was started?
It must have been started about 1905 or 6, because every time that there's even out on Chattanooga, they had their little line back up there, and every place there's a little new community, but those girls are right there.
Is that right?
I wouldn't be surprised if these girls are working on the slope, or a few of them are that type of people. I can't believe there'd be anything else but that that want to go there.
I'll contradict you on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of the women who are...
Well, I don't say
all of them,
but I have to say yes.
Yeah.
I think they might... I don't know. Maybe they're not allowing them. Maybe they don't have...
They're pretty strict up there. They're pretty...
Do you have the tape going all the time in our conversation?
Well, right now it is taping our conversation.
Oh,
yes, it is.
Okay.
But
it started then, because when I came in 1908, it was going strong. They had just cabin, just lined right one after the other. You've probably seen pictures of them.
I haven't.
I probably could dig up an old picture. But see, I lost so many. I don't know what I have and what I've lost. And then a lot of my pictures are at Joanne Rule's now, because...
Wouldn't you know she'd come down here?
Yeah,
right?
And Joanne Rule has quite a lot of my pictures right now.
To go with the book.
Yes, uh-huh. So I don't know what I have and don't have, but maybe sometime I could find this. There's a picture of the line, but it's one that... I think one that Fabian Carey had, and I got a copy from. He's got wonderful pictures, Fabian Carey.
Yes, he's a real historian.
He's what?
He is a real historian.
Yes, he is.
He has a fine collection of stuff.
Yes, he really has, uh-huh. And so anyway, it was going strong then. And it was up until, the 40s, early 40s, I guess, that they shut it down completely. Must be long in there.
I think it was the military in World War II.
Uh-huh, I think they closed it down, uh-huh. Because, it was going strong. And what did you want, a description of it?
Well, you said that you were working in the dress shop,
mm-hmm.
and you were 17 working?
I was 18.
18?
Mm-hmm.
And you were working for a woman, or you were working in this dry goods store, and the girls, there was a telephone system here, and the girls would call up if they had a customer.
Oh, yes, I say, I got a live one. Can you send over some clothes, or can I bring them over tonight after hours? They didn't want to bring them over during the daytime, you know, when it was going to be free, when Mary Anderson would have the free time, you know. So sometimes she'd have me come in and stay over and come back after supper for work. I never got paid anything extra, but I just went back because she asked me to. And I'd go back for work and...
I know this is good. I guess that's all right with the door completely closed. It's not so noisy.
No.
I guess he was right at the door.
Yeah, I think so at that time. Uh-huh. Well, anyway, she would, if I went back to work to help her, she'd have me bring out such and such a dress, you know. She had them in her little private room where she lived back there. She had her apartment, you know, with living rooms in connection with the store, on a kind of lean-to built alongside the store. She lived back there. She was there night and day all the time. So she had a parlor fixed up, real fancy. She had lots of little tables around with knickknacks on and a lot of junk around. So then when new hats and new things would come in, she would set the hats around on different things in the room and have these special hats for special people. She had certain people that she picked out special things for and then put the regular things out. And then she'd call these people and tell them, you know, I think I got the hat for you, or I have new hats in. If you want to come down and look at them, okay. And she did that way sometimes with some of the girls. Even before they called her, she'd call them if she had something she thought they'd like, especially for a coat or something. And then she had a rack back there, that one corner, where she'd hang these things up. So then when she had those things all arranged in there, then she didn't need me so much. But she might need something from out of the store, so then I would go take them in to her. Then other nights, why the girl didn't want to come out, so she'd load me down. I'd take two or three coats and things over my arm. And you could go down Fifth Avenue from her store. You could go out the back door and down Fifth Avenue. And about halfway down, there was a big building there. They called the... It wasn't the racetrack, but there was a name for this building. It was
half
a big,
track,
huh?
Half track.
I guess probably something like that. There was one across the street they called the racetrack, but
the
this
fast
was,
track.
This must have been the fast track. Yeah, I guess fast track. Anyway, it was a large building, and it was kind of a story and a half. And they had a parlor there with a piano player and a madam, and they had these girls there, you see. And so I would slip in alongside of this building, and maybe sometimes it'd be in the building, but I think I only went once in the building. Then I go over into Fourth Avenue. Down there's an alleyway. You could go down the alley. These little cabins facing Fourth Avenue, and a big little alley at the back door, so you could slip in between cabins on Fifth Avenue and go into the back door of these little cribs, they called them. And so they'd leave the light on at the back door, so I'd slip in that way and take the things down. Sometimes I'd leave them, sometimes I sat in her back room while she made her sale, but most of the time I'd leave and go home. So my dad and mother heard about this. Oh boy, they sure raised Cain, and they told me I had to quit my job and everything, but Mary Ann talked to them, and I did, so it didn't hurt me any after, you know, one or two views, and didn't rub off on me. I didn't want anything to do with that kind of a life, and it was an eye-opener, of course, and it was really, really interesting to see how the girls managed these men, you know, and patted them and soft-soaped them and sell their, get their new coat and things on that way. And so one of the girls was in the store one day, and she told Mary Ann and I, she said, you know, if it wasn't for the married men in this town, that we girls would starve. And they didn't buy them clothes, but mostly, but they were there, good
patrons.
Yes, they were good patrons.
They were good patrons.
Yeah, the married men were. That's what this one girl said. But for the married men, this town, half of us was starved. Half
amazing.
Of the
amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I could have told, you know, at that time we're sort of keep things to ourselves. I, you know, could have started a lot of scandals. I don't want it to. Same way, never going to telephone office. There was a lot of things happened that, of course, now a good many are gone. So you don't. Don't mind saying things like that now.
Sure.
That, you know, in our book, there's a lot of names I'd like to mention, but I don't dare because a relative might pick it up or something.
That's true.
And so we have to be awfully careful. And the people that we do mention, I have to get permission from the families to mention them.
Uh-huh.
Going on. But then the way the line was, and then I would collect the money and all, and sometimes the girls would tell Mary Ann, and Mary Ann trusted about them, you know, she'd said, don't they pay her the next day or something like that, because they hadn't gotten the money yet from the man, whoever it was. But the men coming from the Crickshire and bringing their pokes of gold, and they go over there, and you just wonder what it was. I guess maybe just an outlet for them out the Cricks working hard like that, and they would almost spend almost their whole month's wages, you know, over there, a place like that, just drinking. And the girls always had their phonographs and entertain you whatever way they did, you know. And the girls, when you go down the front line there, each crib had their a window almost filled up the front of the cabin, and a door, and then there's next one next to us. Sometimes there'd be a little alley between the houses, but most of them are right close to the other. A couple of duplexes were built. A couple of the more affluent girls and more popular girls, they had built duplexes and had their place of work there. And so to go back to this.
Oh, you mean they lived in one and were operated out of the other?
Well, no, they usually had some of them. They would have a room in the back, a little kitchen, a room in the back for their own bed where they lived. But
oh,
they had
I
what
see.
They're called their workbench or whatever it is in the front. They had a couch. They'd fixed all up fancy and had drapes pulled around it, you know, and all fixed with pillows and a dresser with all kinds of things and all. They did so much embroidery work, and everything was piled with embroidered pillows and fancy stuff on the walls and things like that.
Is that so?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. And two-thirds of them, or half of them, would have dolls. Seemed like some of them at some time or another had had a child or wanted a child or something, and they'd have dolls dressed up on their beds or the chair or on the dressers or something. And they seemed to long for childhood or a child or something like that. And in a way, they were very, very sort of simple sort of people, you know. And some of the girls used strong language, but two-thirds of them didn't. They used just a good language. They didn't swear or go on like some of the people. Like even... I'm shocked as well, and some people I know real well, like a little lady at the table the other day got mad at me the way she swore at me. You know, it's surprising the way people swear now. And anyway, why, these girls didn't swear that much. They weren't that. And they'd come into the store, and they was always dressed to the end, never just showed anything, always dressed up real fancy, and always very good clothes. And usually you could pick them out because sometimes their face would be painted or a little overdressed, you know, but they did go in for good.
Well, you know, there's this old, there are various jokes, I think, that standard jokes, and I haven't heard too many of them, but they usually have the line, how did a nice girl like you get into this?
And they usually have a line of some kind. One lady, while her husband brought her up here, you know, just had married her outside and brought her up to the gold mine and all, and then he put her over there. And different ones have stories like that. And then another girl, she was supporting her mother and her mother and a small sister, and so she came up to support them because it's easier money, and she had no education for doing anything else. And so they heard about this, and they came up for that. And just like Edith Neal, now when Edith Neal was here, she was a girl on. She didn't really work right on the line. She had hers on Fourth Avenue. On Third Avenue, just back with Fourth Avenue, her back door would go over into Fourth Avenue, and so she, her sister was married to a doctor, and the doctor had died or something, and I guess I don't know what he had done, but anyway, something tragic happened. She didn't have a way to make a living, so she sent for her sister to come up here to be with her, and so she, I think she bought a bathhouse. She bought a bathhouse on Cushman Street at that time. She ran this bathhouse between 3rd and 4th Avenue in the old 3rd Avenue hotel that was there. And she ran this bathhouse, so she had a sister come in to help, you know. And or she got her sister, I think she got her interest over in the line or something. But anyway, the sister, she rebelled, you know. It wasn't just what she wanted, though she tried. And then she got so she was quite an alcoholic. But she married one of the road commission fellows. I think it was Joe Stirling she married. And he had a son by his former wife, Margaret Young, and so she helped raise the son. But the Young family, everybody, they fought it. They tried so hard to take the girl away from her, you know. But they built that house on Cushman. That for a long time, it was a music mart up there, and now it's a real estate office.
Is that what you mean on Noble Street?
No, it's on Cushman, and it's. I hope it didn't turn down now, but it was between 10th and 11th, I think, on Cushman there. It's a frame house that's there. Right on the corner, they got a big real estate sign or something, and then the house stands there. I think
there's Dole's.
I think the Phasia next to it.
There's a Phasia?
I think Phasia's next to it.
I think
that's
been torn down. There's a bank there now or something.
Well, the cabin was there. Last time I went back there, right? It was there. Mm-hmm. So they built that house, and it had been there later on. The Ted Loftus lived there for quite a while, too.
Yes, that's so.
So he built that house for his wife, and... And but then my getting married and all, and I just don't remember too much what happened to them after that.
Now, there was a girl down on that went down and nursed at Nenana.
Uh-huh, well, that was the same one, Edith Neal.
And
yes, she's the one, yes. She went down and she took care of Nenana. Huh? And then last year's in Seattle, she died in Seattle. When Eva came down, I'd take Eva up to see her. She was in a little funny old hotel up on 8th and, was it 8th or 7th and, I can't remember now. It wasn't Ambassador, because that was another one over. It was
Pike Pines.
It was up there. Anyway, it was an old one. I think it's gone now, I think. But anyway, Edith lived there her last years of her life.
She did.
And they had a funeral, and lots of us went to her funeral. A few of us went to her funeral.
Hmm.
Yeah. And Chuck Hoyt, I think it was, he wrote an obituary for the Newsmire about there stood a woman or there goes a woman, something like that. I have a copy of that someplace. I don't know just where that he wrote. And a lot of people, they thought that was terrible. They just... And then Eva McGowan proposed her to be a member of the Pioneer Auxiliary on account of all these feats. But I don't remember what through or not. I have a big memory that didn't. But Eva proposed under being an honorary member. I mean, you imagine what an uproar
that
was.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Oh, Eva pulled for us. She laughed because she knew the good that she did.
The good
you know.
That she had done.
And my husband used to have to go over and fix her pipes and repair things when she had her cabin on 3rd Avenue, you know. Mm-hmm. And he had great admiration for her.
Is that right?
But then this Rockwell Kate that's so famed and everything, boy, couldn't say one good word about her.
Who was she?
She was Rockwell Kate. She was supposed to be that Klondike Kate from Dawson.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Dawson when her day up there, you know. And we went down on the boat in 1948 while she was there, and the captain was dancing with her. Oh, that's Rockwell Kate, that's Klondike Kate, and so forth, you know. And Jeff said, this makes me sick. He said, I got to go to bed. Because he didn't like what they're making of her like that, you know. But she did her good deeds, of course. And I understand she died a good Samaritan, that everybody in her neighborhood just loved her, and she about broke herself taking care of people and all. And but he had no use for her Dawson days, whatever.
So, well, isn't that funny? And yet he didn't judge Edith.
Hmm?
He didn't judge No. Edith.
No.
He admired
no,
her.
No, he admired Edith, but this and Kately had no use for her, whatever.
Isn't that interesting? Maybe he heard some in a single story or something.
Yeah, well, it's different people's different versions, I guess, you know. Like, she is supposed to be a very great, wonderful person that found out Kate is, and she's written her history and all. But that was just a surmise, and of course, he couldn't always be right, I guess, but that was his idea his Dawson days. You know, he's in Dawson in his youth.
I see.
He worked at the Regina Hotel, which was the hotel where all of these girls and this bathtub and the champagne and all that took place, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
And he tells about that. Seemed like this girl that had come, that was at the hotel, and the man had come in from the creek, you know, and he had his poke of gold with him, and somehow or other she'd made a remark that is something that he would give her a bath in champagne. And so when this took place, why, the boys took a bottle after bottle of champagne up there, and half of them they took out in the room and they emptied and they put water in it. Then they sold the champagne. Jess, I forgot how much we made, almost enough for a trip outside by changing the champagne for water. And
Jess was in on that?
Oh, yes, Jess was in on that. And anyway, but it was lauded that she had her bath of champagne, but of course they didn't dare say anything. These come out, you see, after all this happened. He tells about this.
He didn't tell you that a lot of those bubbles were bubbling water.
Yeah, that's so. Just imagine, they couldn't see all of that champagne going down the drain. He said, why, she'd have a bath in that. So he and one of the other boys there, they had emptied the bottles or changed the bottles or did something anyway. They put water in instead of the champagne. Yeah. And of course, he was there to see her bathe. The man was, you know, he had to be there to bathe her in the champagne.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't that a crazy story? There's so many crazy stories out of Dawson, you know, like the guy bought up all the eggs because he met his girlfriend, and she... That's come out several times in different
that's
stories.
Been published,
you know?
Yeah.
Yes, he bought all eggs, so his girlfriend couldn't have any eggs for breakfast. Oh, golly, it must have been wild. It must have been a place. But you know, when I went up to Dawson with my husband the first time I'd seen Dawson, and I saw the city, the old Regina Hill, the hotel still standing, and different things. It was such a different perspective. I couldn't imagine these things happening in those buildings, like he told about, you know, because they're little old. Run down, the Regina was a corrugated iron building covered with corrugated iron, but I guess it was quite fancy inside. And
they're restoring it now. Bob and I were up there this.
I guess that's all gone. Yes, it was all gone last time I was up there.
They had to build a whole new theater. What was the?
The Palace Theater.
Palace Theater.
Uh-huh.
They have built a perfect exact replica.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's. Fireproof.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, it's a...
Well, that's that Palace Grand.
Mm-hmm, Palace
when Jess
Grand.
Told me about it, he told me that the balustrades were all covered with velvet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not now, you see. And the chairs were all velvet, but those don't look to me like those are old chairs that are in there. I mean, not chairs like he described that was
I
in there.
See. I see. No, then it is not just the same.
No, it's not really, but they do have the three tiers of balconies and that and all that. And,
Clara, going back to the line, you told me about... For one thing, a gal named High Pockets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What? And
that was Bergie. That was Bergie's first wife. She used to. Bergie was an Eagle member, and he being married to her, he made her. She became a member of the Eagle Ladies Club. We didn't have the auxiliary then. We had the Eagle Ladies Club, and I should know her name. Anyway, Margaret Bergie is the second Mrs. Bergie, and he had this girl, and I called her High Pocket because she's so long legged.
Oh.
You see, she was really, really long-legged and very short-waisted, and they called her High Pockets.
I see.
That's the way they had to give these people these names.
Right. Yeah,
uh-huh. So she was always called High Pockets. And her name was, trying to think what her name was before she married him. You know, too bad. Well, if I'd written down, I wouldn't have lost him in the flood anyway, but maybe one day it'll come back to me. But it seemed to me like her name was Edith. Edith Bergie. But she had another name. She had another name, but... when she's on the line.
And then you told me of an evening, I think Jess was out of town, but he had a friend who had bought the old half-track.
Oh, yes, Frank Taylor, uh-huh. Yeah, Frank Taylor.
And he had a girlfriend who was a barber.
Mm-hmm. She had come up here, you know, and she's a blonde girl, and she played to be so innocent, you know, and she'd come up, the first lady barber in the Fairbanks, and she was in Bob Cornemarsh's barbershop, and that was where the old Comet was on Cushman, between first and second, along in one of those little places there. And, well, Frank, he was just fell head over heel in love with her. She was so pretty and so this and that, so perfect. And so he wanted to have a dinner up at his place, and he invited Jess and I to come down. And because he wanted her for dinner, but she wouldn't come alone. She said, oh, I can't go up to your place alone. She said that wasn't just the thing to do, but it turned out she was everything else but that kind, you know. But then she's playing with him for some reason or other, I don't know why. And so Jess had to work that. Somebody was sick, and he had his work down at the power plant, and he couldn't go. And old Frank was so disappointed, and I said, well, I'll be your chaperone if you still want me. I said, she knows that you've asked me and all. And I said, but I have, Lala was the baby then, and I want to go to the baby. Oh, we're taking the buggy and all. And so we moved the baby buggy down, and he carried it up the steps, and this place had two bay windows. Everybody seemed to have bay windows those days. The old Northern Hotel had, on the second floor, they had these bay windows. Each front room had a bay window. Same way at the Pioneer Hotel, they had bay windows sticking out over the street. And so this fast track had two bay windows. And so Frank had ordered from the old Model Cafe, he had ordered the dinner all cooked and sent up to us, you see. And so when the lights come on over in the, it was just in the fall, maybe just about this time of year. I remember it was kind of crispy when we were swimming the baby buggy down and home again. And he carried it up there. And time it began to get dark and the lights come on, why then we sat in the balcony to watch the things going on down on 4th Avenue, you know. And that's where I got quite a bit of an eye open too about what went on down there. And these girls would just like act like kids out there, you know. They all wore the line of clothes that Mary Anderson carried was Japanese silk kimonos. And they would be kimonos with kind of a long sleeve and open down the front, and so they could wrap them around it. They didn't have buttons or anything on, but just kimonos loose, you know. So these girls would be out there in these, and these would fly back, and here they were, skip hopping on the plane, hopscotch or something over the cracks on the sidewalk, you know, and doing all kinds of antics just to attract the men around there. And or that, they'd be sitting in their window. They all had a couch there in their window, or a fancy chair all decorated, and there's some broody things and all. And they'd be sitting in the window there, and there the rope would be open, you know. They'd be cross smoking a cigarette, and they would be there naked. And that's the way they, you know, drawn them to the man in. And when a man would step in, of course, the shade come down quick in the door and so forth. And that's the way they lured, like a spider, you know, luring the flies into the web. That's the way the girls were. And it was really comical. And this girl, you know, she's all eyes, you know, and you think being an innocent she was, she wouldn't want to see anything like that, you know. But we had a lot of fun. But Frank, he wanted to do other things, you know, but we were so fascinated, we didn't want to be entertained. But Frank, we wanted to, because he had a pool parlor downstairs. He had a pool parlor down on First Avenue and almost near Lacey Street down on First there, in a shooting gallery, his pool parlor and shooting gallery. And because Jess and I used to spend many evening down there, I got to be real sharp with shooting these hopping rabbits and things. And so when things kind of seemed to move away from First Avenue down there, something, why he moved the, up into the line up there on 4th Avenue. I know I used to get mad at Jess because nights when Jess wasn't busy, something, he'd go down there and he'd take care of the pool table for Frank while he did something else, you know. And that's one thing I was very, very unhappy with Jess about, him going down there. I don't think I've mentioned that in the book, but anyway, why? That was one of my contentions with him. Of course, I knew that no harm in it, but he was just helping a friend out, don't you see? And he came home once.
Well, the fast track had been there had been a madam in there.
Yes, uh-huh.
And then Frank brought her out.
He didn't bring her out. It was empty from the time he took over. There wasn't anything that time.
She
it was things. You see, the mining was down at a slim end then. There wasn't hardly any mining then. And the Fairbanks was way down. That's when Wickersham went out, you know, with the gold and after that. And Fairbanks was on the downhill. You never would have thought that it was going to pick up. But by the time that they heard that Wickersham was working for the railroad, but then that was 1912 when he first mentioned railroad, and it began picking up. And then 1917, well, the bill passed that the money had been appropriated for the railroad. And you see, Lila was only about 6 months old. She was born in March. So
which
this
one?
Must have, Lila, the older girl. Mm-hmm, yeah, the older girl. So, let's see, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Well, it must have been in the spring that we did this. It must have been in the early spring while we still had frosty nights in March or April. Mm-hmm. She must have been pretty small when I went up there. When I stopped to think, kind of tie things together,
sure.
It brings back memories because she was pretty small. And I remember after we had several drinks that night, he was drinking quite a little, and she too, and he walked me home. I don't know how she got home. I don't remember, because she walked with us or what. Anyway, Frank insisted on pushing the baby buggy, and several times I thought he was going to dump it right off at the sidewalk, because sidewalks are high on stilts, you know, and he was always running the baby buggy off, so I had to take it from him because he wasn't feeling any hurt, you know.
Feeling no pain.
No, And so I think just a couple of weeks after that, then he found the girl. She had other fellows, so that kind of broke it up.
Okay.
She was a pretty little thing, blonde, curly hair.
She had greener
baby
passion.
Face, a baby face, you know.
Yes.
She
was up to make her fortune.
I think so, mm-hmm. Yeah. And Frank was a sucker. But he later married a girl by the name of Clara, too, and they lived in Oklahoma. So Dad and I went out in 48. We spent 2 weeks with them back there in Oklahoma City. But now she's a widow, like I am, but she still keeps up the old home, a beautiful old brick home, just
in Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
Well, Sir, it's about 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Well, gee, you know.
The line was fenced off. I don't think there's any place in the world that had a place like that. You know.
This is what I've heard.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we'll continue that after 12 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. You were going to tell me about this unusual fences.
We're going to describe the Fourth Avenue. Well, they had this, on Fourth Avenue, on Cushman, they had this big board fence across Fourth from side to side. It was, you know, the full width of the street. There was this big board fence, and then they had a gate opening. So the waterman or anybody delivering groceries or things, they could open the gate and go in. And then at the side, they had a, it looked just like part of the board fence, but you went in and behind and this way, kind of zigzag things, so people wouldn't see in a line walking by. And if a man wanted to slip in, you see, they wouldn't see him. He could slip in there very easily without being noticed, you see. There's one on the one side and on one walk, and there's one on the other walk. There's two of those on each side of the street. And then there was walks, board walks, on each side of the street, turned down to Barnett. And then the same fence, same gateway down there on Barnett
Street. So it ran just from Cushman to Barnett?
It ran from Cushman to Barnett, uh-huh. And then on both sides, down on it would be on going down to.
That's where everything is completely gone. That's where Safeway's.
There isn't anything in there now.
No, and the Elks Hall and the mall. And the
that's all in there. It's all in there now. That's completely gone.
That's all for. Yeah. And the parking lot. There's the city.
There's a big city parking lot in there too.
Yeah.
And the Florida Dance Hall. You've heard of the old famous Florida Dance Hall. When I came in 1910, that was there'd been a the Alaska Market was right on the corner there for years. On the corner of 4th and Cushman, there was a market there in the ground floor of the long hotel or the wool apartments that were there. And on 4th, and there was the Florida Dance Hall was there, and it had a back door opening off onto the line. And, you know, when you talk about the Florida and you think of some big dance hall like Eagle Hall or something, but it wasn't. It was only about a fourth the size of Eagle Hall. It wasn't very big. Mm. And then that closed in 1909. It was closed down.
Oh, I see.
And then they... later on, different stores have been in there, like the Alaska Market was in there at one time, and Mrs. Cass ran it, you know, Martha Cass, she and somebody ran that market there. But anyway, on down through then, you walk down through, and there's on the left side of the street going toward Barnett, there were 3-4 cribs right here, and then there was this big place we called the Fast Track, or whatever it was. There's two, it's confusing now. We call that the Fast Track, and then again, we heard about the one across the street. Frank Taylor had his pool hall in that they called a Fast Track, and I don't know which. There must have been a different name for this big one that had the madam in and all on the upper side of the street there, you know, on the, or I'd say it'd be the south side of the street, because that's the big building until you had the man and madam and the piano player and all this down there, and then about 3 cabins down. And then from there on, just right.
Was that a 2-story building?
No, it was just a kind of a story and a half, because the roof came down, and then in the middle of it there was rooms up in the middle.
Oh, I see.
It was it just came. Just
was
a
that frame?
It was frame, all frame. Mm-hmm. Uh huh. And they had an office in one corner, facing Fifth, and then on the other side was kind of a little. I don't remember now what was in there, but then you went into this parlor to deal with the dance floor there, and the girls would be all dressed up sitting around there, and you went in the piano playing. And
what would they wear when you say all dressed up?
They were just ordinary dress. What I mean is, they're all long dresses, mm-hmm. but they weren't overdone. Mm-hmm. They would sometimes have short puff sleeves. Some had long sleeves and high neck up here, and they didn't do much exposing of their anatomy at all, like you know they do nowadays when they have Golden Days and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you'd never see one of those dance hall girls out on the street with a short dress on. Always right down to the ground. They never exposed themselves out on the street. Of course, now in Golden Days they have to dress up like a dance hall girl, but you never saw them around on the streets or anything like that. They were just that way in the hall. But at this place here, where they had the madams and all, they were just dressed up like any lady in a parlor, you know, just like you walk into any lady's parlor, like that. Uh-huh. Hmm. So that's the way it was there. And then they had on the Fourth Avenue side, there was a little restaurant over on the Fourth Avenue side. There was a little restaurant coffee shop over on that side, where they could go in and have coffee if they wanted, or girls on the line can order breakfast or go in there.
I see. Oh, in other words, that's served just the line itself.
Just the line itself, actually. Uh-huh. And then they had most of the men out, because they could go down 4th, 5th Avenue, slip in there, and it wouldn't be like going in down the 4th Avenue side. And fair on down until almost to the end of the block, there was a man, he had a, what do they call him? Anyway, he had kind of a repair shop down there on the corner, right there on the line on the corner. He had sort of a repair shop there. I can't remember his name now. And then, of course, across the way, all the full block was just, until we get up to this, what was called the Fast Track, where Frank had his place there. And that was right on the alley. There was an alley, the old fire hall, you know, used to be on 3rd Avenue, right at the end of the Turner Street. And alongside of there, there was an alleyway that went back to 4th Avenue. And the fast track was right on that alley, just on the right side of that alley.
See. Well, that's where the Safeway parking
lot is. That's where Frank had his, because we went in through this alley, but we went up to his building and had back stairs going up, outside stairs. When that burned down, about 5 people lost their life in that. Remember when that burned down, there's 5 people up there. So that's the way that it was. And then they'd open up the door, and then at nighttime you go along, while everybody tourists, because you hear the old phonograph going. We had tourists, but they had this one, Mrs. Benham, she was Della Bell, and she could sing at the top of her voice. And then it was Fanny Hall, and she was a wonderful singer up in Dawson. They called her the Songbird of the North, something like that. And you'd hear her singing up above, you know, and a little noise. People kind of wonder what was, the kids especially would wonder what's back of there and the bright lights and everything. And so that's the way the old 4th Avenue was.
Kind of a Bowery, like in the city where they had a Bowery.
Yeah, that's right. Only they were out open on the street where this is behind the boys' fence.
I wonder what they did in the winter when it got real cold. They couldn't.
Oh, I guess just the same. They
couldn't frolic in the streets quite
no,
so readily.
No, I don't suppose they could. I couldn't say what they do in the winter, but probably just dressed up, sitting in the windows and like that, you know. That must be all that they could do then.
Yes, you didn't have occasion to visit them in 60 below.
No, not through 4th Avenue, no, but through 5th Avenue. I'd gone into the building, their home, you know, their rooms, but I never saw out onto the 4th Avenue at that time. That was one thing they were careful of. I never did see out onto 4th Avenue when I would take the things over for Mary Anderson, though. I never did do that.
They shielded you from their operations.
More or less, Yeah, they were very, when they come in the store, you know, they're always very polite and nice girls. And then at one time, there was a man that the name was Charlie Thompson. And he was a saloon keeper. I think he had interest in the California bar, if I remember right. He brought in 5 or 6 French girls. They had imported 5 or 6 French girls, and they had gotten them in, and when the authorities found out why, then they started to ship them out. So this Thompson, why, he hung on to this one girl called Mignon. And I heard later they must have married, but anyway, there was quite a lot of propaganda about them. And so he sold out everything, and he left here. And after they got into Mexico, they never heard anything about them. They just disappeared. Nobody never heard where they went to. Never heard anything about them. They're supposed to have a lot of diamonds with them and this money, because she was just showered with diamonds. She had them on all her fingers, and he must have invested most of his money in diamonds on her. And so they went down to Mexico. But they never heard from them. They don't know where in Mexico they were. They just disappeared off there. Charlie Thompson. And he was his big man in most everything. To Boost Fairbanks, you know, when they started. I think he one that helped start Eagle Lodge. And he was one that, see, Eagle Lodge was started by mostly all gamblers and saloon men and a few lawyers. And so anyhow, he kept this Mignon. All the other French girls had to go out. And it's funny when they come in the story, you know, the chapter fed, but you know, you couldn't hardly understand a word that they said, and it's hard to wait on them. But they were cute little bit of things, and one was a couple of homely little French Jews, just like the little dirty Jews, you know. And they finally, they went here too long, they got rid of them and shipped them out. But I guess he thought he was going to make some money on a proposition like that. I never heard any detail, just what they had against them or how they could ship them out, but they did, they got rid of them quick. But he kept Mignon with him. And then I don't know if they married him when they went out, or they, but he kept her in his home. She was over in his log cabin. He had a log cabin too, alongside of East Neal's that faced on 3rd Avenue. And so he kept her over there most of the time. And then when they went out, he sold out all his holdings here and left with all his money. Well, I never heard from him again.
He just disappeared?
Just disappeared. He had been down the house.
Down on 4th Avenue, from Barnett to Cowles, did any of the activities of the line extend over into those little cabins over there?
None that I know of, no. There was a couple of Cushman. There was one girl right at 7th and Cushman. There's a cabin that stood there for a long while, and one of the girls was kept there. And I think she was the girl that belonged to, he was a lawyer here, and later he brought his wife and son in. Before he brought them in, he established this girl. And then even after his wife got here, I'd be in the store and I'd see her walking him down like to the model to get him to coffee or something to sober him up, you know. She was a tall, kind of attractive girl, and always wore a great big cape that was lined with red, come down to her ankles, and she'd be holding him up and helping him down the street. And he had one son who was in school with our kids, and he was here not too long ago visiting. And he was one of the businessmen, and there was several. And then there was a Joe Smith of Smith's Gun Store. He had a girl over there, and they built a house down on Cowles, on the corner of, well, on Cowles, between, that was one place over there, between 4th, 5th, and 6th on Cowles. He had a house built for her over there, and he had his wife down on 1st Avenue, too. But how these women put up with these things, I just don't know. But some of these things are just vague in my memory. I'm not just positive about everything, but I do know this was his cabin, and I know the people who bought the cabin, you know, because they're good friends of ours. And his sister, Ed Clawson, came up and, in 1909 or 10, and she and her, the man she was going to marry, they bought that place from Joe Smith. There used to be Smith's gun store here. There was George Smith and Joe Smith, and there was three Smith brothers. And George had the house at, it was way down there on Noble Street. It was torn down for the for building the Northwood building. And several different people had restaurants in there. Mom Walker, she ran it as a restaurant for a while. And I can't remember. I know Cora was a schoolgirl. She used to go down and wait table and work for this. Miss Frank McGarvey. Miss McGarvey had it for a while. Ran it as a rooming burning house.
You told me, what was it? We were talking about fancy hotels.
Mm-hmm.
This woman had said that they just don't build them like they used to.
Oh, yeah.
And you said, oh, yes, it's such and such a hotel.
Oh, it was the Shaw House.
The Shaw House.
Shaw House, uh-huh. It stood at 2nd Wickersham, right across from the old auditorium. It stood right there. They,
How's that working, Mrs.
Shaw? It's really warm and nice now. Just comfortable, Art. Uh-huh.
It's still staying.
Yeah, uh-huh. Do you want to go feel it and see?
Excuse me.
Uh-huh. It seems like it's doing real good. It's just right. Mm-hmm. Don't you don't get too hot.
Comfortable.
Yeah. Well, that's something I can't guarantee the way
no.
I got it.
Uh-huh. What do you have over there? What's the temperature?
75.
75. Well, that's a little warm, but I guess we'll eat that for a while. It's been so cold in here. The boys are awfully good to try to make you comfortable.
Isn't that nice?
Anyway, it's where that hideaway and that stuff is on right across there on 2nd Avenue, 2nd and Wickersham. You know, they had it mixed up.
Oh, yes. I was mentally visualizing first, but uh-huh. This is a... I know what you mean.
And when I came here, Dr. Sullivan's house was on the corner of 1st and Wickersham. He had a log house in there, and he later moved it down to where he was on 1st and Cowles there. And then after he moved that out, there's a tennis court in there. I have pictures of the old Shaw house where it shows the tennis court in front of it. And if you want to shut that off, maybe I can find it and see if I can see.
In this picture here, there's a... This is on
this
Cedar
is first,
River.
Yeah, First Avenue. Avenue. Uh-huh. Between Cushman and Lacey.
Here's the NC Company. Now, here's... These buildings, it says Tanana, Seattle,
they were saloons.
Eagle.
They were all saloons. One saloon after the other. There was on the corner here was the horseshoe. Now, see, the bridge went across to Turner Street here, not at Cushman. See, here's Cushman here.
Oh, yeah.
The bridge went across to Turner. And then here would be the horseshoe, and I don't know what this one was. And then, because the fire in 1906 took all this out, and these are second buildings. And then in here is the... In here, there's a bakery in here, and this was a drugstore, and later the laborers had the store. But I came here, there was a Red Cross drugstore there. The Tanana and the Seattle and the Eagle, those are all saloons. And one after the other. Can you imagine they support that? Yes. And then up here is the Arcade Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, the model was in next to the arcade.
Mm-hmm.
And then the arcade was Arthur Williams, and then when they had the fire... Well,
that's across from where the USO and the Chamber of Commerce is now.
Well, they're...
They're along about in there.
Yeah. Well, they'd be on this side. The Chamber of Commerce would be over here if they crossed from Cushman Street for about in here. See, there's nothing on this side of the river except the hospital and a few buildings there.
Well, no, wait a minute. Maybe, no, I'm not turned around.
You're looking south.
Yeah, right.
The south, uh-huh. So the Chamber of Commerce would be on this side across the NC, you know, crossed over here on Cushman. See, here'd be Cushman Street crossing here. The Chamber of Commerce would be right here across from there.
Mm-hmm.
The USO is right, you know, along in here where the old Nordale stood. We can show you a picture of old Nordale where the thing is now, and then there was the arcade, and then the old Cavia bathhouse, there's a bathhouse in there, and then here's the butte, you see, you can see the butte.
Well, now, your mother ran a bathhouse.
And my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law.
Yeah, and that's where Jess and I met.
That was Jess's mother that had the bathhouse,
yes,
that's
Jess's
right.
Mother, huh? That's where we met. Huh?
And I know you clarified to me that there was no relation between a woman that ran a bathhouse then and women that run bathhouses today.
No.
Because
no.
The massage salons are off in the front
That's what this was, a bathhouse, yes. There was no hanky-panky going on there. They got a bad reputation because they sobered up a lot of the drunks, you know. The drunks, they'd be sent down there to sober up the drunks, and a couple times a woman had to come down and take their husband out of there because they thought there was spoiling his reputation being down there and such, you know, like Mrs. Protzman. She'd come down and raise Cain one night and dragged her husband out of there, but they were doing a good job. They were serving up these fellows while they went home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he did have a little clinic. Dr. Ogard had a clinic, and he took care of different types of ailments. He had quite a line of people who came there all the time to see him.
Hmm.
And I know he fixed my head, broken down arches, and he did a wonderful job of curing my arches for me, and I never had much trouble after that. Hmm. Of course, that would be way down here, Father.
I see.
First in Cowles.
Mm-hmm.
So,
These were the first boots in Fairbanks. My husband,
isn't that nice?
My husband worked on the Rock Islands, you see. He worked on there from 1902 through 1905.
Oh, now this is the Lavelle Young.
Yes, on my name is Isabel. Now, you see, Lavelle Young is one he brought up here first to start at Fairbanks. Then that fall, that winter, he and his wife went outside and they had built the Isabel. And so the Isabel came up in 1903. I think it was taken 1903.
Well, now, this was the boat that Barnett brought up
The first time.
The first time.
Yeah, the Lavelle Young. And we have the wheel in the museum, out the Pioneer Museum. And the Rock Island, it wrecked. I have a picture someplace of the Rock Island is wrecked just off of the Chino Bluff down here. It just worked on the Rock Island for 1902 through 1905.
Hmm, for 3 years on the river?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think might be something here. This picture's of old Nordale. See, here's the Nordale. Now
the fire.
Chamber of Commerce should be up here, because here you can see the Arcade Cafe crossed here. Now, this is the Nordale Fairview Hotel in Nordale Burning Sea.
And, of course, this was the first Nordale that burned.
Yes, that's the first Nordale. Down where the USO stands there now. It stands right where the Nordale is. Hmm.
Well, they certainly...
You don't have any tape going out, do you?
Well, I do, but the cheapest thing we have is tape.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, that's... Nordale. There's another book picture here too, but I think this is a Susie. That's the boat I come up on. It's taken at Dawson, and I had the university dug up these pictures because they took mine. I took mine out there after the flood,
These are fabulous pictures.
And then this is down at the town of Chena, the boats at the town of Chena.
Now, was this a university picture?
It was one that I had that this Huey that had taken the picture. No, it isn't Huey either. The shades, no. Well, anyway, yes, it's one of the universities. No, they didn't. No, that's
Riverboat Shore in Golden Days. Uh-huh. They've used this in the paper.
Yes, they used that once. Uh-huh. Hmm. And then I've seen copies of it. You know, they take my pictures and then they make copies, just like when Salka wrote up the life story of W.F. Thompson in the Alaska Journal. Mm-hmm. You saw that? Mm-hmm. Well, the picture in there of all the printers together, that was my picture, and I happened to have an extra copy.
And they copied it.
And I gave it to Stanton Patty. Now they got his name under it instead of mine.
Uh-huh. You didn't get any credit for it.
Uh-huh. Which I don't care too much about. You like to get credit for Christmas.
Well, it's kind of nice to, it's nice to get credit for what's yours, what's rightfully yours.
Charlie Mace took this out at the university in 1948 or 49. I mean, out at the museum.
Uh-huh.
According to the museum.
That's nice.
I was going to give those to girls if they wanted them. Let's see. And then here's when President Harding was here. Here's Kitty Hensley right in the very beginning. I had that picture made in the Kitty Hensley house.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I recognize it.
I had it copied from here, and I gave it to the Kitty Hensley house. And here's Mrs. Frank Clark, and here's Minnie Kramer, the old Mrs. Kramer, the mother of Charlie. And here's Mary Rapp. And here's the Kramer twins. That's Margaret Kramer. One is Mrs. From down at Seward. Hit. And the other is from down at California. She's up here this summer. Mm-hmm. And that's the two girls. And up here's Frank Dury. He used to work in the bank for years. And there's quite a few there, if you just can know who they are. And this is my daughter, Lala, with the big bow on her hair. Mm-hmm. Standing right here in the corner over here, down the corner. Yeah. And those are pictures that...
Well, this is the same one.
Yeah.
Of the Lavelle Young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you made copies. Charlie Mays made those copies for me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you like to have one of those?
I'd love to have
one. Take one.
Oh, I'd be thrilled if I could take it home and frame it.
Uh-huh.
Hang it on my wall.
But Charlie Mays made those in 80s extras for me.
Oh, that was nice.
That's a noise.
I'd like to have a... If anybody ever makes a copy of one of those pictures of you...
Which one?
As a girl.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Oh, that's quite...
You mean one in the tin here, one here?
Yes, uh-huh.
And these are... somebody said there was a window made of bottle, but it's not. It's the Edson Records around Sonder Records.
Oh,
because Jess and I made a trip down there once in the early late 20s, and the records are still there. And I've been sorry since I didn't take one, but you know, I wasn't picking up anything at that time. So.
Clara, you came up on the steamer. Now, which one was it that you came up?
I came up on the Northwestern. There should be a picture here somewhere. Maybe Joanne. She got so many of my pictures there. And
you know, when I sailed on the Alaska Steamship Company, my first boat trip. Mm-hmm. Was on a big steamer, but I just wonder how the riverboats compared to an ocean voyage. Mm-hmm. For example, when they called the dinner, did they go around and ring the bell? Or
yes, just like they do here for us. Uh-huh. They went around and rang the chimes. Uh-huh. It was real, sound real pretty like. Uh-huh. This is in Elbury, my old aunt's house. This is a neat little leisure. Come in. Hello, have you got me some mail?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
We'll just lay it there for now, huh? This was Clary in 1907, Clary City, huh? Do you remember Neville Jacobs here, Linda?
No, I've seen you before.
Linda. She was Linda Lindig, but I don't remember her married name now.
Yeah. She's Linda Gavin, yes.
She's in the office up here.
We've talked, sort of, on the phone or something.
This was one that from the university, too. I have a picture of the Nanana at Nevada. I want a picture when I wrote the story Coming Up the River, and so I, university dug up these were old prints that I had that were given me by this Huey. When I traveled up the river, this Mr. Huey, Huey in Holland, and he would give me pictures.
Well, now this is at Chima.
No, that's down at Nulato.
That's Nulato.
See the cross on the hill? They have a cemetery up there. And then this is one of Fort Gibbons. It was Fort Gibbons. They
what was that story you told me about going down to Nulato that they had the... Oh, the train. You took the train over there? There was something about going down to, I don't mean Nulato, but Chena for dances? Or?
Oh, yes, I'm from Fairbanks to town of Chena. You know, they had a little train down there. Yes, that was what we did.
The town of Chena was laid out.
It was quite a city. It was quite a city that time. I think one picture shows it pretty good, but this was a call chain. Now, the university dug these up for me.
Well, this is
for my story that I wrote for the Alaska Journal about coming north on the boat in the first issue of the Alaska Journal. Well, these are pictures they dug up for that, but they were my pictures, but I had to put their name on the back of them because they got the reproductions. And this is in Keystone Canyon when in 1907 when they had that feud, the railroad feud down there. And this is my brother. He got shot in the hip down there, and that was a picture
holy mackerel
of him.
Now, did he survive that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so he survived it, but then the next year he drowned out here in Chattanooga.
Oh.
He was crossing the ice. He just was distant.
Now, was that the Guggenheim? That was Valdez.
Yes,
that
the was Valdez. This was the Valdez, or the home. It was the home railroad company that he was working for. And then the Guggenheim started a railroad, and these people were coming in on their right-of-way, and they had the feud over the right-of-way because they had abandoned this and moved their right-of-way over to Cordova, you see. And so then the Chena people started their own railroad, and then they had a feud over the right-of-way because the others weren't holding the right-of-way even if they weren't using it, you see. So he had this battle there. He was a lineman. He climbed the poles and...
I see, and he was one of the ones that was shot.
He was one of the ones
that
was
shot. There were very few casualties.
No, there wasn't.
But there were... That's interesting, because when I was in Anchorage, somebody was telling me about that, and he said, oh, yeah, she says they had a gun battle, and somebody got hit. So that was your brother.
Yes, he was one of them, This is the old telephone office when I worked there. This is a machine shop here. This is Turner Street, and it's right on the corner of the 3rd, the 2nd and Turner. It's right back of the NC Company now. I don't know what's on that corner. What's on that corner there now? So, parking lot for Safeway. They were moving it. They were tearing it down.
Tell me something. In Alaska's history, we have a few feuds and adventures, misadventures. We haven't known the chronicle that Rex Beach wrote about the...
Over the railroad, the Iron Trail, or something like that?
No, that was Cordova. But no, the spoilers. The spoilers where the fellows jumped all the claims, and it was a big Washington problem. I mean, it was the Secretary of State was involved with that or something.
Yeah.
But and then we had the Guggenheim conflicts over the Cordova Railroad. That was Rex Beach's book, The Iron Trail. But I was trying to think of major swindles and conflicts, industrial conflicts that have taken place. And
I don't remember any of those, no, because I was coming young and I was getting married and all this, and I didn't go into that.
But here in Fairbanks...
But little by little, as I'm going into history, these things come up, but I haven't delved into them.
Well, this is what I was trying to think. Here in Fairbanks, we haven't had any real major... issues arise.
The only thing issue was when the Wickersham went south of the money from the bank, just broke Fairbanks, you know. In 1910, I guess it was, he went south of the money, and the stores were issuing script. And Mary Anderson, I was working for, she would take script from people to pay her for the bills and things like that.
Well, now, that wasn't the Judge Wickersham.
That was, not Wickersham, Barnett, Captain Barnett.
Oh,
it wasn't Wickersham.
Know about
it was Captain,
that. Captain
Barnett.
There's Captain
stories.
Barnett.
There's stories. Oh, yes, that's written. Now, Joanne Wood has it in her little... I think she has it. Either she or Cashin have it in their books of Fairbanks early history.
Well, that just slipped over me. Barnett took...
Yeah, he went south of the money, and then he's another one that they never could... He went into Mexico or something and never could punish him for it. Never got the money back.
And that's what happened to Barnett.
That's what happened to Barnett. That's why he disappeared. And that's why a lot of people, especially Adriana here, she thinks, well, it's a damn trick. Anyway, she's strictly a mention of Barnett because, you know, the school's named after him and the street's named after him. She thinks that's really...
terrible, because he was a real crook in the end.
Yeah, I'll say so.
Well, now, when he founded when the town came into being, when he dumped off his boat here, he went out for the winter to get another boat, but his brother remained here.
Yes, he did, His brother, and then he had his wife's brother remained here.
That was it, his wife's brother. Now, what was their name?
I'd have to think of
it. I can't think of it, but whatever happened to him?
Well, they were mining out on Clary. They were out on Clary Creek mining, and... they were around for quite
well, what happened to the family when Barnett took off and went to Fairbanks?
Well, I don't know. Of course, Barnett had no family of his own at all. He just had his brother here. And then there was a sister. Mrs. Barnett's sister was, Mrs. Barnett's sister was married to a dentist here. I think it was Whitney, Dr. Whitney. Because they built a house just a door or two beyond there, Dr. Whitney. But I'd have to think that over a little, I'm not so sure. But I think it is. I know it. But anyway, she had a sister that stayed on and married a man here, and they made a good.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's some. There, now that was inside of the Shell House. But later on.
Oh, this beautiful hotel. That's what you were looking
at. Yeah, later on, these people by the name of Foster took it over, and they rebuilt it a little bit. But this is the way the parlor was, and had this big settee here, and had big leather furniture and chairs and everything. And then this led off into the dining room, which, after the Fosters took it, that was their living quarters, see? But the living quarters, they didn't have a dining room when they moved over on First Avenue.
Well, that really was a grand building.
Look at the
14-foot ceilings.
Yeah, and look at the tin, pressed tin roof, you know, and then up the stairs, they had this plush parlor up there.
It's
quite a place. And then it went through here at the dining room. This was half of the building, the dining room was the other half. I should have a picture of the front of something. I don't know. I have another one of these. This is another one of Fairbank, but you can't see the Andersons. It's cut off here because there's Eagle Hall here, and Anderson don't show here. But here's Christmas Street coming down here. This church. And this old building, still stands. They put a third story out, and it's that old Mortimer. What was the name? It had a rooming house there, and I think it's condemned now. Well, here's the original picture. She had a copy made from that of my brother.
Oh, there's your brother. Mm-hmm. And he drowned in the...
He's the one that shot, and he drowned out in Chattanooga in 1908, in May 1908. He's crossing the ice, and he didn't listen to the fellows that told him
not to go.
Yeah, so there's another one of me that Mays took. He's always taking pictures out of the Peter Monument.
Always taken. You've always been a beautiful woman.
I don't know about that. This must be a old... Herman
Anyway, right. Yeah, there you are. Mm-hmm. You know,
so that was what I was looking for, really.
But, where was this with the sawmill?
That's Ruby, I think.
That's Ruby.
Let's see.
Looks like it must be.
Yes, that's Ruby. Now, see, Mary Anderson, in 1911 or 12, when Ruby was struck, she packed up a lot of stuff and she went down there. And then when she came back, I know I was pregnant with Lyle, and she came back. She brought back all of her goods because it was, you know, kind of a rumor then. It wasn't anything. And she brought all of her goods back, so I went down and I helped her restack her shelves, put her stuff back.
You know, Clara, you ought to go up to the archives, and I don't know what all they have in there, but Paul McCarthy said they have a lot of stuff, photographs like this, that have no identification on them.
Uh-huh.
And it's very possible.
I've identified a lot of them, but, you know, I don't think I'd ever could have identified that if I hadn't had the picture. But, you see, I had these pictures for telling about my story up the Yukon, you see. Mm-hmm. And then the Army was so fussy about getting all these things, so I went out to the university and asked McCarthy, so he had these pictures printed for me. But, you see, they were my pictures, but I have to give them credit for it, you see.
Give the university credit for it.
Yes, see here. I have to give them credit.
Because it was originally your picture.
But they refurnished that as they saved them from the flood, you see.
Of course,
and I gave them to them, and so now they're their pictures, so I don't have any credit.
You know what you ought to do? You ought to say from the original collection of Clara Rust, and on loan from the university.
If you want to see how inside the butter house looks for the mines, so this is Jess, you know. And this is the hoist that would pull up the buckets for the gold in out of the hole. And then this machinery he used, and Jess was running it down here in the Gold Stream in 1905, 6 and 7 out there. Mm. This is kind of a cute picture, too. This is hard to believe it or not, but this girl here, Ellen Carson, her husband, is the hall of Karst Clothing Store.
Oh.
This is Cora, and this is Edith Clausen. Now, she and these two were the same age, but they were such chums and friends all the time, and Ellen and Cora more the friends, and this is June. So I guess that's all. This is the Tickle Roadhouse.
That's a great picture. That's a terrific picture. Now, is that going to be in your book?
I don't know if it is or not. I doubt it. I don't think we're going down. It might be one of our trips down there. I don't know. That's a big one, you know, we had. Mm-hmm. And then these were the dogs that we trained for the oldest Mary's trip down the Yukon when I made that trip down there.
That's right. That the Mary's, she lived with you.
Yeah, that she rode up. No, she didn't. They were neighbors.
They were neighbors, yes.
Yeah, she rode up in her book, True in the Far North. She had.
But you trained their dogs.
Yes, we had trained the dogs. They had been 4-to-a-tandem. They had two toboggans and 4-to-a-tandem. And they had never gone before. I mean, four had a single line to the toboggan, and they'd never been in tandem before. So we trained them to match what we thought were the two best ones, and we trained them to go tandem for his trip down to the Yukon. But before, you see, they had these toboggans, and the northern way up north around there and all the sleds were toboggans. And each dog had its own line, so if one went in a hole, in the ice hole, he couldn't pull the whole team after him. And so each had their own. Each one had their own. And they didn't know anything but Eskimo talk and to train them, you know, and try to teach them English what we met and all. And this is oldest Mary back here. He had just come back just before he made the trip. And he took the dogs out to get used to them a few times. So we named the dogs.
Isn't that interesting? Uh-huh. But they had been from Barrow or something?
They had been up from Victorialand.
Victorialand,
way up there on this Hirschberger. Hirschlander, Hirschberger and his son had brought down, I guess, about $1,000 or $1,000 worth of white fox furs. And when he was going to take his son outside for the first trip, so they sold the sled and the dogs here. And E.B. Collins bought them up. And then after he bought them, he found there were dogs that he couldn't handle or weren't very useful to him. So when Jess was looking for dogs, Ollis had wired Jess and sent a telegram to pick up two dog teams for him. Why, then Collins, when Jess was inquiring around, why, Mr. Collins told him about this team, so Jess bought this team for him. Of course, he got paid
Isn't
in from
that interesting?
Uh-huh. That's sort of the trip they made down, you know, in her tour in the far north, the trip, her honeymoon trip, they made
yes.
these dogs,
mm-hmm.
these dogs.
They're beautiful dogs.
Oh, yes,
picture.
They were beautiful, and we just loved them.
And you trained them all right?
Yes, Jess and I, we took them out every night, and boy, the fights we'd have, I think we had three or four fights in one block.
The dogs would fight.
And we finally, we tried to take the toboggan out first, and my husband was so resourceful, he took a great big heavy hinge, and he put spikes under it to use for a brake, you know, to stop the dogs mm-hmm. when we running the toboggans, and he thought hanging on a rope on a toboggan with a brake would work, but it didn't. So we had ordered two sleds made for him. This was one of them by a fellow by the name of Fred something across the river. He made sleds and snowshoes. He was quite a builder. He built boat too. He built them on one of our boats that we had. And so Jeff, he got one sled finished, so we got that and then trained him with the sled. I used to take him out. I'd take five or six of them out at the university and pick up Margaret from bring her town from the university, and finally got them so they were well trained. They were beautiful dogs.
Not too many dog teams left.
No, they're
when I
only
came
the race dogs now. They just train
yeah.
them safe for racing now.
30 years ago in Anchorage, they had a lot of dog teams.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I looked out my window one morning on right in the heart of downtown Anchorage in the fall, and a guy was going by with an old automobile.
Well, this was a racetrack, or I think it's, look at the old cars lined up here. It took 4th of July, and I think either they're waiting for an airplane to come in or a racetrack. I can't remember that too much because they got the grandstand over here, but look at the old cars.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little pack train. Now see here, Bentley Island over here, and this used to be go across to the end of Wendell Avenue. They had a ferry across there.
Kennedy's pack train with what, 200 pounds of gold dust? Mules. Mm-hmm. Now where would that have been coming in from?
That's from out the creeks, like the Gold Stream and all the mining.
Well, would they have brought them in on a barge down the channel?
No, they.
This was a ferry.
This was a ferry across the river. They come in over there above the hospital. It was at the end of. Oh, one of those streets come in behind the hospital over there, came down, and then this is Bentley Island here. They was coming across here, over here, you see?
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. This was me when I was telephone operator about 1939.
Oh.
This is the old house out at the homestead. That was our cabin out at the homestead. The kids were playing in the road.
Hmm.
I do that now.
Where was your homestead?
On Badger Road, about 6 miles out. This was an old stage picture, too. Shows how the stage was run. These are old postcards I had.
Oh, I love this stage picture. Two stages? Now, is this a double ender?
They're going and coming, yes. No, those are the regular stages. Double enders wouldn't be up high like that. They're right flat on the ground. No, these are two stages. One's going, one's coming. They're passing
stages
someplace.
Meeting.
Uh-huh. That's why they sat up there like that. No, but you see, we got our old stage. The NC company, when they closed out their stage line, they gave us the old stage. We had that out of Escalade, but, you know, it's getting ruined. They let the kids climb over and pull out.
Yes,
and,
isn't it cold to ride in those stages?
Well, I don't know. They don't seem to be. They have these charcoal foot warmers, you know, and They bundle them, always have ropes, the stage people do to bundle them in. This is another at the top. There's Anne Crank.